The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Strigger, as always joined by my man, Dylan. Dylan, hello.
Strigger, it's great to be back. And I would like to thank all of our listeners, as always, for following along with the New Japan Cup with us as well. It's been a good couple of days since we last talked, probably over a week now, since we were last on the free show. But, Strig, I gotta say, I've been feeling good. We talked about my... Also, I think this was not on the free show, but I would like to shout out everybody who sent very nice wishes to Nanny, my great-grandma, who I threw a birthday party, 83 years old. I got a custom cake with a dolphin on it, which is her favorite animal. That's a very Japanese animal. You know, I feel like the dolphins. Just look at Super Dolphin.
Super Dolphin.
Super Dolphin. On top of it as well. Super Dolphin and Super Dolphin. Yeah. Very recognizable. And I like to think that it was in some small way a tribute to them. But it was a very nice time. I got a new TV in this last time. I know TVs are very important to people at times. And I got the gimmick where you hang it up on the wall. I've never done this before. Yeah. We had talked about this before.
we discussed that because I'm very suspicious of these wall hanging things, and I just fear that they might just drop when I'm in sleep, and I just frantically get up.
See, you warned me against this, and I did not put this up myself. I actually, because I live in an apartment, I got the maintenance man of the apartment to come over and hook all of this up for me. Or not hook
up
the wires
up. Oh, so you had a guy for it, I see.
Yes, exactly. I was not going to do this myself. And Ken was in here. Ken was so annoying. But I just want to say this when all this was happening. Because he was sitting here talking like he knew everything about everything, but in reality he didn't know shit about nothing. Because he was like knocking on the wall trying to find the stud. And the guy was like, let me use my stud finder to find it. And it was in a completely different place. So I think Ken was like, I know. Because I was like, remember, somehow or another, this was a 50-inch TV, okay? So I set it on my bed before we plugged it in, or hooked it up on the wall or whatever. And there's a thing that goes into the hanger thing and to the back of the TV. And I kept telling Ken, I was like, remember, the bottom is like this way. It's not on the other side like you think it is. And then he put it the one way, and then the guy came in and started screwing it into the TV. And then by the time he was through, he was like, this is upside down, isn't it? And I was like, I told him it was the other way. And he didn't listen. Striga. It's crazy. How can you get it upside down twice on hanging up a TV? He got the hanger upside down and the thing on the back of the TV upside down. So we had to fix all of that first. And you can guarantee I was very worried about doing anything. There might as well have been a laser force field around this TV for the next 3 days, pretty much, because I didn't want the slightest touch to be happening right now. It was crazy.
It sounds like it was crazy. People tend to get really upset when things don't work out like they plan to immediately. And I gotta say, when I put things up, I always make sure that my dad isn't around, because he will just get totally angry at the first thing that doesn't work out. So I can relate to that.
Yes, but it's worked out perfectly. I've had a lot of fun playing my PS4 on the TV, watching wrestling on there.
Nice.
It's been a great thing. And also, I will shout out everybody who's celebrating 4th of July in America. I know this really isn't a thing in Germany.
Why would it be?
Maybe it is, Stringer. No, there's not. No reason to turn it down. I mean, to me, there's never a bad time to drink.
Well, that is something completely different. Usually, on this weekend, the first weekend of July, we always have the big celebration in my hometown where I come from. It's called a Schützenfest, and we've talked about that. I've explained to you what that is and what that means. It's just a big coming together, and we just drink a lot of beer. That's the basic gist of it. But of course, this year this can't happen, and so I went anyway. And a couple of people are doing some minor, some small parties, throwing them, and with a couple of people, but not as many as you would usually have.
That's a shame, man. I miss the big parties and things like that. But maybe next year you'll be able to have Schützenfest all over again. And, you know, here the only thing that happens that is really annoying about 4th of July is the fireworks.
Yeah.
Because people fire them off like 2 weeks before the 4th of July actually happens. And usually in very extreme places. Like this past Sunday, somebody shot off a huge thing of fireworks in the hallway of the apartment.
Great idea.
It was brilliant. And it was right at also right outside my door. Mama and me were sitting there watching 90 Day Fiancé, mine and Fredo Esparza's favorite TV show, and suddenly we hear this huge thing going off outside, and we were like, what the? And then they like had to kick it outside the door, and it flew past my my porch outside, because I live on the end of the apartment. So yeah, it's like green, pink, and red lights all flashing off, and we were like, holy crap. Mm-hmm. And then Ken ran out and said, what was that? Am I going to have to shoot somebody? And I said, go back to bed. Pretty much. It was just fireworks. You have to remember, there was a time, this is the same person, and I love Ken to death, okay, but this was the same person. We had a very scary experience now, but kind of funny in hindsight. But back then, someone actually tried to break into our house once, okay? Like, threw a big rock through our door, which is like a glass sliding door at the time. And glass shattered. And what does Ken do? He ran out with a gun that was unloaded with no bullets inside of it. And all I had was, because I was doing martial arts at the time, I had these Eskrima sticks, which that's like a, you know, stick fighting martial art. But not good against like a gun. So if someone had broken, we probably would have been shot, and we would have had no bullets. I would have had sticks.
Well, like it sounds more effective than an unloaded gun, to be quite honest.
And unloaded—that's me, Stringer. I don't have any guns, but I collect bullets, like in case for my defense. I'll just throw them at people if someone breaks in. But yes, an unloaded gun was very useless. But he hit his mind though. He said, "I'm gonna have to shoot somebody," but it never happened. That's why this time when he came out now, it reminded me of that. And I just said, "Go to bed," and he did. When he went to bed, and nothing came of it other than a goofy story for me to tell on the Eastern Lariat, which is. Sometimes in wrestling, there are many goofy stories told, and maybe we'll talk about some of them later, especially with a certain debut that happened on the show we're talking about, but I want to think that I'm living the spirit, and, you know, I had martial arts style training, so in many ways, I was 12-year-old me at the time when this happened, was the impetus for the Grandmaster, in my opinion.
You were? Oh, man.
Maybe not. I don't want to be compared to him. But 12-year-old me would have liked it.
I guess so, yeah. He looks a little bit like a Blue Ranger. I don't know.
Yeah,
Kamen Rider Kawato.
The worst version ever of that. He would definitely be the Operation Overdrive of the Power Rangers, if that was going to be a thing.
Before we go to New Japan, you said some goofy stuff. I wanted to get into some really upsetting stuff. First here on the show, to get that out of the way, definitely I wanted to talk about it, wanted to bring that up. In the last couple of days, I did not feel too well in the last two to three days, so I really didn't read a lot of the things that came out surrounding Hana Kimura and Terrace House, but I definitely came across the tweet by the user Shigio. He's great at translating articles from Japan on his own terms, he always says, and it's totally fine. It's his at is at @sg_oxxt. Gotta follow him for all these updates that he brings. And he said that Yoko Kimura, Hana's mother, was on an interview with Shukan Bunshun, And she said that she asked Bushiroad for cooperation to find out the truth, well, about the death of her daughter, but they refused. They've told me to hold memorial events and make money by selling goods. And also that after the incident, those used to make money ran away to avoid their responsibility, and I want them to feel responsible, and I strongly hope that no one will have the same experience as my daughter in the future. So, I mean, we talked about how good New Japan and Bushiroad looked all amidst the COVID-19 stuff when they came out with all the other promotions and said that pro wrestling should return as the last sport and all that blah, blah, blah that never happened. We talked about that too. That pro wrestling never went away anyways. But still, they presented themselves as responsible company, as responsible employers to their employees, and looked really good. And in that case here, it just shows that a big company can also be, of course, very shady in their art of doing business, because to me it looks like they just don't want to get into any trouble with the people on Fuji TV.
It's just, this is a terrible, like, terrible thing that has happened, and Bushiroad has had their fair share of missteps, you know, not just lately. I mean, I think any company, if you look deep enough into their history, has some dark times, you know, things that maybe are shady. Yeah. But this is just publicly terrible, and obviously we're in the wrestling community so affected by Hanakamura's tragic death that it hits home so hard. It just, it's so sleazy, the fact that this is her mother, you know. Like, a dead woman who was only 22 years old, her mom is doing this, and it's like, this is how you're going to treat her? It's like, what can you even say? There's nobody who could justify this.
And I mean, the mother gets to the company, and she says, let us find out what really happened to Hana. Mm-hmm. And the response is, you make money by selling goods. Like, that isn't even a response.
No, but that unfortunately, that's how big companies, they look at people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they might as well be goods to them. All they see is money. All they see is a brand to protect. That's why a lot of times this whole show ultimately was based off of a fake premise that they sold to people. Not unlike pro wrestling in a lot of ways, but that this show was 100% reality. Mm-hmm. But clearly it wasn't. It's a tragic thing that happened. I'd also like to shout out another Twitter user named Farah Akase.
Oh, yeah.
Who, you know, that's her ad as well. She had a whole thread on Kyoko Kimura's interview that she did.
Yeah.
And also, as well as the Japanese trope of Yarase as well, which is like pressure from higher ups, as she listed. So it tells a lot of stuff that Hana was going to, some Line messages. Line is an app that, you know, I myself actually use to talk to people from Japan and Asia as well. But it goes through a lot of the stuff going on, a lot of Hana's struggles as she was going through the show. And also that they originally, in the segment where Hana got into all this trouble with the fans, if you remember, there's a part where she flips off the guy's hat. That was like a really thing seen as really disrespectful, but they actually wanted her to slap him in the face, and she couldn't do it. As she told Kyoko, so that's the kind of thing that they wanted. And the crazy thing about it is they told her to act like a pro wrestler. So like they saw her that way because she was a wrestler. Never mind her actual personality. Never mind who she was as a person. It was because she was a wrestler that they put her in this crazy role. And you look at a lot of the comments that they shared in this article I'm looking at right now with Kyoko, and it was like, I knew pro wrestlers were like this. Why is she such an angry gorilla type of woman or whatever on there? You know, and it's kind of crazy that people would go so far. And that they would have this stereotype of her, because look at Hanakamura. There's nothing about her that comes across as an angry, you know.
I mean, just the term angry gorilla itself is just so upsetting in every possible direction you can think of.
Yes, that's true. And there's nothing about that was nice to her. And she even told her, this is exactly what we talked about on the Hanakamura Memorial episode that we did, which I would highly advise everyone to listen to. But she even mentioned that I get over 100 hurtful messages a day, was basically how they translated it.
Mm.
That's kind of what I mentioned on that episode, is like, you know, there's one thing to deal with like mean comments or whatever, but when you're getting this over and over and over every single day, it's crazy. You know, like there's nobody that can be counted on to be that strong, you could say definitively how you would handle that. So for Hana to deal with all of this pressure and all of this pressure, not just from the people, but also from, like you said, Fuji TV and Terrace House to act this way that she clearly is not, and she clearly wasn't in real life, it had to be just a terrible thing, for Bushiroad to handle things this way, and that reaction that they gave Kyoko is just pathetic, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, there's no... Like I said, I can't even bring myself to comment on it too much, because what can you say? Nobody with any kind of sense or heart cannot say that was despicable.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think there is anything else to add. It's just a despicable move by the company, and, I mean... Yeah, sure, at the Stardom show, they did this memorial scene for her, the 10 ring bell salute. You know, they had everybody stand up. But then it was just like a regular show, you know? And, mm-hmm. Of course, some of the wrestlers paid tribute to her in their own way and fashion, but it's nothing really that stood out that this was supposed to be the first show after what happened, you know?
Yeah, it was terrible, you know, like that, to go through that, see Jungle Kiona's emotions, to not even be able to wrestle yet. You know, for her at least, that, you know, it meant so much to her, and like you said, unfortunately when it comes to companies like this, it's almost like a life goes on mentality. With not even, you know, like you said, it was a basic thing at the start, but then just a normal show. Like, it was back to business as usual right then. Another thing I'd like to comment on, which doesn't have anything to do with this, but I just want to use this platform to speak out on it a little bit. To see the reaction from her castmates in Terrace House was so upsetting to me, because it's like when they had their reunion or whatever, they were actually, Terrace House itself was deleting comments about Hana on there, and was not there was nothing really even said about her or anything like that. It's like they tried to erase this bad thing from their history, and likely this show is going to come back in some similar form. And to me, that's very, very troubling that their actions, you know, really led to a terrible tragedy happening, a young girl losing her life, and it seemed to not have any effect on the castmates or the producers or anybody, the big companies behind it. It didn't have an effect, and it really is upsetting on that level, you know? I hated seeing that so much, and obviously the company reaction is equally terrible. I hate seeing it, and I know the fans out there are hurting still to this day, and all I can ask out there is that we keep Hana Kimura's memory alive in a good way for, you know, because we know the truth, that those that followed her life and her career in wrestling, and so many people that were touched by her in life. So I hope that we can keep her memory alive and in a good way, because Terrace House doesn't want her memory to live on. They want this to be forgotten so they could do just their regular old reality show, same as always.
I mean, it comes down to what you said earlier. When for a big company, people are goods, and you can just replace the one good with another good in that kind of thinking. You know, it's, of course, from the human side of it, from the human standpoint and from the moral standpoint, it is terrible. Mm-hmm. But we always have to keep in mind that is how these big companies operate, and...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Man, it's upsetting, of course, yeah.
I know, man. It really is upsetting, but I'm happy we got the chance to talk on this, because it's a really important thing in life, not just wrestling, you know. Like, Hana Kimura, the wrestler, everybody misses her, obviously, and everything, but this is a human life that was lost because of negligence, and just a terrible, reaction to it. I always said this. I remember saying the same thing. To me, I do think that, like, even if all of her actions were real, the reaction to her, there's no excuse for that. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of that either, that she was harassed by so many people, you know, for something they saw on TV that obviously wasn't even real. But even if it was real, that doesn't justify bullying somebody until they kill themselves. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that, there's no excuse for that, and I don't think we can lose sight of that either, that this was a whole thing of the viewers of Terrace House, and perhaps even a whole society problem that may be way over our heads to even speak on, but to me, I think that shouldn't be forgotten either, that she was driven to this by so many people, and totally unjustifiably, in any sense of the word.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, besides these shady tactics as a company, as a business, of course, there's always the side that Bushiroad is also an entertainment company, and they try to entertain us with their wrestling product, or with their products now, with Stardom Added 2. And that is the other part, the other topic we are here to discuss today. It is the New Japan Cup. And Dylan, the last time we talked, we were up to the 23rd of June. So we were up to the fourth day of New Japan Cup action. And going back to last week, there was a show that has an overall current total rating of 6.63. And the two standout matches at this show probably were Tomohiro Ishii against Togi Makabe, as well as Katsushika Okada against Yuji Nagata. As well as a pretty good tag team of six-man tag match in the mid-card, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kota Ibushi, and Ryosuke Taguchi defeated Doki, Taichi, and Zack Sabre Jr. What's there to take away from this show?
As you mentioned, the Ishii and Makabe match, as well as the Okada and Nagata match, I know that was something you really was looking forward to, the Okada and Nagata match, and I was too. I was happy to see Nagata in a role where he got to have a big match. The Ishii and Makabe match I thought was interesting because we had had this discussion on the last episode that you really enjoyed, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in a little bit as well, when Ishii was the bigger man fighting smaller guys.
Yeah.
You know, that was a role you really enjoyed Ishii in. And here, he had that in the first round against Desperado at a match that many people liked. And here they put him in a different role against Makabe, who is an interesting thing for me because I also really enjoy Ishii when he faces bigger stars. Like, I always feel like his best matches are against Okada and Tanahashi, where he could be an underdog and have a big underdog type of role. But here he was in neither of those roles. Or he wasn't the bigger guy, but he was also the clear favorite over Makabe. But still, I thought he totally succeeded. And Makabe continued his streak of working pretty hard. I thought it was a good match they had there. Actually, probably as good or better than their never title matches that they had a couple of years ago, I feel like. So I liked it as well.
Yeah, we have it at 6.79. Meltzer gave it 4 1/4. I gotta say, I'm really impressed by Togi Makabe, how he's wrestling as of late, doing more bumps lately. And just overall, it seems like he's working harder than usual. And so this match was really, really well done, and I'm really glad that we got this match here in the undercard of this show. We also had Taiji Ishimori over Yoshinobu Kanemaru. There is not a lot to take away from that match.
I thought that was so disappointing because they have all of this history together. And they really didn't do enough to play off of this. And ultimately, this should have been a big deal. Ishimori finally pinning... Say what you want about Kanemaru, but Ishimori pinning him finally after all these years should have been a big deal. And instead, you had like this sub-10-minute match that was really ultimately a nothing match.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, there's not much to say. Going to talk about the tag title setup later on in the show too, so skipping the six-man for now. Hiromu Takahashi against Toru Yano. Toru Yano threatened to cut Hiromu's hair, and Hiromu came out with a helmet. And the match, in the end, turned out to be, a match where they basically fought around the elevator a lot. I mean, the finish itself was pretty fun. What did you take away from that?
Like I said, on principle, I never liked these kind of matches in, like, a world title tournament. Like, you know, like we were talking about with Jado and Gato, potentially Yano can be going for the world title, but instead, and in fact, two titles. And instead, he's more worried about cutting a guy's hair. You know, so it's like, that to me, just on principle, I'm not going to like. But in execution, this was, Hiromu was more than charismatic enough to play this off and make it fun. I thought the finish was completely awesome, somehow, for some reason, Yoda Tsuji becomes involved in all of this.
Yes! And, yeah. And in the end, they almost screwed up the finish. Because Yoda Tsuji is a bigger guy than Hiromu Takahashi, and he was tied to Hiromu. So Hiromu tried to roll Tsuji into the ring, and it didn't work out because they were still tied together. And so they had to jump simultaneously to make it to the 19 count.
I loved it.
Imagine Hiromu just being counted out because they fucked it up.
Well, considering how the rules are enforced in New Japan, I think we would have had a very long count to that 20. That would have happened.
19 and a half!
Yeah. Come on! Like, you know, kind of like how you go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then he just doesn't do anything, he just kind of pretends to break it up. That's what would have happened with Hiromu. He'd be like, 19, come on! I'm counting, I'm gonna do it! But no, it was very funny. They pushed the elevator button together, which is very funny.
Yeah.
And then they had to go back to the ring, as you mentioned, and almost blew it at the end, which was hilarious. And they never even untied, if you notice, even after the match.
Yeah, they put that through.
I feel like Tsuji should be like a co-winner of this. If Hiromu was to win the tournament or go to the final, Tsuji should be in line for a title shot as well, in my opinion.
Yeah. Absolutely. He beat Toru Yano too.
Yes.
Yeah. Okada and Nagata, 20 minutes. Considering how Nagata's first round went with Minoru Suzuki and how hyped everybody was after the match the two had and after that fight the two had, I gotta say I was a little disappointed by this main event. Because, I mean, Nagata... we'll talk about that with Okada in the upcoming rounds too. Everybody is forced to work an Okada match. And it's just... It's not nothing new anymore. It's not fresh anymore. It's nothing surprising anymore. Everybody gets to do the same match with Okada. And that is just... That takes all possible surprises away. Because you always know how in the end it will play out.
Yeah, I thought this match was significantly better when Nagata was on top. Like, working his offense. And when Okada got on offense, I thought things went way down. And what do you make of this? I said this as well on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. We've covered the entire tournament, tournament live. But you've been doing a lot of stuff lately, too, on there. So we've got all sorts of fun stuff on there. But specifically to this match, I mentioned that I thought the match was better when Nagata was on top than Okada, because I thought Nagata was very motivated, even in this match, to have a good stuff here. What do you make of Okada's Cobra Clutch finisher? Would you say that he's used in this tournament?
We'll skip to another point I wanted to make in the end of the show, but it's totally fine. Every submission that Okada has ever done looks like shit.
Yes.
Remember the Koji Clutch version that he did, the Deep in Debt.
Yes.
Then he had this red ink, the cross-legged chin hold. Mm-hmm. Which looked totally goofy because he's just such a tall guy, and when applying it to much smaller wrestlers, it just looks bad. And now he has this Cobra Clutch version, and it just looks like he's putting the guy to sleep very comfortably, you know, and not like he's squeezing on the guy. I don't buy it.
It's not even a real Cobra Clutch. It's like a reverse kind of version. He puts the arm behind the guy's head when he does it.
Yeah.
Because he had done, if you remember a few years ago, they had done him using the actual Cobra Clutch storyline. I believe it was done to the New Japan Cup. But he used it, because I remember making this very joke before, that his version of the Blackout was worse than Rodney Mack's. Yeah. And it was true then, and it's still true now, with this inverted version that he has. It still sucks. And it's very bad, because especially get someone like Nagata, who is a guy who could do submissions well. We've seen it before in matches with like Shibata and, you know, other people. His match with Suzuki was obviously much more about let's beat each other up, pretty much. But here we really didn't get either of that, but I thought that you compare that, because he had just done the Nagata lock right before that, and then Okada then locked onto his reverse Cobra Clutch, and they looked way different and not in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not a good look with Okada in submissions. I don't know.
No.
Yeah, so that's June 24. 1 week after that, the New Japan Cup went on with the show again, Korakuen Hall, of course, the empty Korakuen Hall. July 1st, in the opening, we had Yoshihashi going over Bushi. Your guy, Dylan. He made it to the quarterfinals.
His leg didn't, unfortunately. It's funny because there was a big discussion online the last week, or in the last couple of days probably, that was like, who's better, Sho or Yo? I was seeing that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it says something when Yoshihashi on one leg has a better match with Bushi than you do, and that's kind of what happened. But that's not saying much, because this wasn't a great match either.
It was a 2.5-star classic.
Exactly. That's exactly what I gave this, a 5 out of 10 on the cage match ratings. And it was hardly a great match by any means, but it's Bushi. What can you do? And he was injured. I was happy to see him use the Karma instead of the as well, equally bad as Okada's Cobra Clutch, the half butterfly lock.
Uses. At least against smaller opponents like Bushi, the butterfly lock doesn't look as bad as it looks against Tenzan, for example.
Yes, yeah. Correct. You're totally right on that. But I like the Karma better as a finish anyway.
Karma is good. So,
yeah.
Though it strangely looks like the Made in Japan.
Exactly. I was just about to say that. I think the reason he doesn't do that as much is because Shingo's around now.
Yeah.
So it's like another... Hey, listen. Shingo also has the Last of the Dragon, which mm-hmm. also looks like that. So now we have another person using this move. This is just a great move, Striga. Everyone should use it.
Yeah.
I feel like. But, yeah, no, it was good. The match was average at best.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Above average, definitely the next one, Zanada defeated Sho in about 15 minutes. After the match, I tweeted that Sho deserved better after his great outing in the first round against Shingo Takagi. I definitely had hopes for him to maybe score an upset on Zanada, but of course they had to go the obvious route with Zanada in the tournament. I thought the match was quite all right. Just again, much like in the talking point that I had about Okada, everybody gets to work a Zanada match when he's wrestling Zanada, so Sho had to do a lot of reversals here as well, going in and out of the skull end, the move that the submission move that Zanada always does equally bad as Okada does.
Yes, both of those are worse.
But there is one guy who does the skull end even worse than Zanada. We'll talk about him in a bit too. But I thought it was an okay match, but nothing great.
I really like Sho working a technical style here. I was so impressed with Sho in both of his matches in the tournament because he did a great job working a Shingo style of match and what is normal is his style with the power junior technique. Mm-hmm. But here we saw a more technique based match, and I thought he was actually really good at his role. So I really appreciated seeing that from Sho. Sonata, as you mentioned, the skull end is terrible, and that's no secret, I feel like, but I thought that Sho really made this something worthwhile, a bit better than the opener. I wouldn't say it was any kind of classic or anything, but a 6 out of 10 match is where I would go with this. Sonata, he is what he is at this point, but I was really impressed with Sho, and I thought he did a lot of really cool stuff, and a way to show how varied he is as a performer, where he could work a match with Shingo and a match with Sonata, both totally different, and he worked totally different in them, so I was really impressed with Sho here. Sonata didn't do a lot for me, but you know, it is what it is with him. I think I was kind of on autopilot with Sonata this whole tournament, just because I knew they were going to push him heavily. I never really bought into Sho winning, and that held this back as well. So I'm happy that you had hopes for him to score the upset, because I'm unfortunately I emoed out during this match, and I was completely hopeless for a Sho win. And,
that may have been a big part of that too for me. I guess Sho, of course, was good, but autopilot is a good description for it, definitely. What about Taichi and Kota Ibushi?
So much bullcrap in all of these matches for Taichi, and not the crowd. There's no crowd. There's no point to this, I feel like. One thing I did note is that Zach was back by the ring and not Doki. So it looks like they're continuing the normal tag team, the Dangerous Techers team.
Doki has a very different role.
Yes, he had a much better opportunity ahead of him. Tanahashi was there, of course. This was all built up to the tag match. I loathe Taichi. And I've said this before, so I won't harp on it too much. But I absolutely loathe Taichi cosplaying Kawada and doing his moves so bad. I cannot think of a thing I enjoy less in New Japan. Even Okada's crappy submissions, than watching him do a crappy version of Kawada. I can't take it anymore. But there was all kinds of stuff going on here. There was Iron Fingers in the match. The referee had to act stupid. Zach ran into the ring at one point. This was totally unenjoyable for me. But I will say this. Ibushi made it better when he was on offense than Tanahashi did in the Tanahashi versus Taichi match. That's just my take on it. I thought Ibushi did a better job than Tanahashi, and when he was on top, much like Sho and Sonata in some ways, or Nagata and Okada, when he was on top, I thought the match was very significantly better than when Taichi got his stuff.
I actually thought for once that the strikes that Taichi threw looked better than they usually do. That's not saying that that he should do it permanently, or that they are great or anything, or on Kawada levels or anything, but I thought they were pretty all right here in this match. But
also, yeah, compared to Ibushi, I think might have made him look a little worse. I concede that point to you that they may be a little better. I think I was just comparing him to Ibushi, who mm-hmm. has a much better version of those moves. But I agree with you. I think I agree with you. They might have been a little better in this match as well.
Yeah, and basically everything built up to the tag match that was to be expected, but so many shenanigans with Zack and Tanahashi entering the ring was a bit much, definitely, at this point of the match. And since we're talking about shenanigans already, why don't we talk about Evil and Hiroki Goto? So, the most part of this match I really enjoyed. I thought they were doing great work together, because Hiroki Goto and Evil, they click very well, and it comes down to their wrestling that they click so well, with Goto and his headbutts and Evil working towards the Evil, the STO. That always works well. And in the end, it could have been a match where Evil just goes over Goto, but for whatever reason, they chose to do another ref bump in this match to put over Evil as the bad guy here in the match, as the heel in the match, and he beat down Goto to, in the end, be successful with his Evil. So I was totally puzzled by the decision to let Evil be the cheating heel in this match instead of just being the heel that just goes over.
That finish, I completely agree with you, by the way. I thought this was on its way to being the best Evil match in a long time. And then they had this stupid finish where they did the ref bump, and it looked like he was going to put him in the Scorpion Deathlock, which is he's been adopting a little bit more lately. So I was cool with that. Okay, like, we're going to move to this, you know, even with the ref bump, whatever. Like, you know, that wasn't a big deal to me. But then what does he do? But stomps him right in the balls, like, instead of putting in the Scorpion Deathlock. It was so stupid. I hated this finish so much. But then I will say this, I mentioned this as well. Goto sells the Everything is Evil better than anybody.
Yeah, he sells everything so great. That is why the match overall was still pretty good, even though the finish sucked.
Yeah, the finish was terrible. But like, this was on its way to being like an 8, like, yeah, to me.
Absolutely.
But then the finish like took it down to like a 6 or a 7 in my book. I just thought it was so stupid. And like, and not just that they did it, but how it was executed. Like, why did he do that? It was so goofy. I hated that. But it, like, he sold the Everything is Evil great. And like you said, Goto's just an awesome worker, man. Like, I love watching him in all of his matches. I even liked him against Yujiro. I thought like it was also a 6 caliber match as well. So like, to me, Goto's great, but I had no problem with Evil winning. And like, to go on to your point, did Goto really need protecting like this? It's me.
No.
He's lost so much.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Doesn't even matter if you put out Goto clean in the second round. Why wouldn't he lose there?
Yeah, it would have made no difference at all for him to just win clean. But I guess they're telling some kind of story with Evil.
Yeah, they are, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but so it started here. But still, they could have done that whole thing a lot better, in my opinion, than just him stomp him in the balls, like for really no reason. I thought that was just goofy, in my opinion.
Definitely a rather lackluster show, I might say. Best match probably is Sanada versus Sho.
Yeah, I think so too. Either that or the main event. You can kind of go either way.
There's give and take with both matches. Yeah.
Yeah, I give them both about a 6. Out of 10.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. So not a good day, or rather regular decent day of the New Japan Cup. They then went to the quarterfinal matches on July 2nd. And man, this started out with a proper banger. Hiromu Takahashi defeated Tomohiro Ishii in 19 minutes and 12 seconds, 8.81 by the cage match users, 4 3/4 by Dave Meltzer. So right on par with the cage match users, actually. And dude, this just was a absolutely great match. And here we again had Tomohiro Ishii against Hiromu Takahashi. Tomohiro Ishii working as the bigger man, even though you could just see, dude, Hiromu Takahashi is not smaller than Tomohiro Ishii, and Ishii has been working the G1 for years and years and years now. And now with this tournament, definitely, Dylan, I'm coming around to your opinion on Hiromu Takahashi being one of the wrestlers that can definitely go up to the heavyweights and compete with the heavyweights there. And we saw it in this match with Hiromu and Tomohiro Ishii just throwing everything out. Scenes that I will quite remember from this match definitely is the lariat that Ishii threw at Takahashi and that he sold so great. And also, near the finish, when Hiromu Takahashi couldn't put Ishii away, he did his own version of the brainbuster to Tomohiro Ishii, where he just basically threw him away and he had him land on his head. That looked absolutely crazy.
Oh, yeah. Like, this was the perfect remedy for that last show that we had with it was like basically a really average show, like 2 5s or 2 6s level of matches. And now here you get this banger to start off the show. It's like, okay, this is what I love about wrestling. You know, Hiromu and Ishii. Hiromu, just a phenomenal job. To me, my whole point on that was like, as long as Zach is a heavyweight, anybody can be a heavyweight.
Yeah.
Because like, there's no way he's 200 pounds. I'm sorry, but there's just no way that that's believable. And Hiromu here, as you mentioned, Hiromu did a great job working Ishii's style and his own, you know, mixing his own style as well into it. So I really loved earlier on Ishii, when Hiromu would try to step to him, Ishii just had this total, like, annoyance to this guy who is taller than him, but is much less, you know, is not a heavyweight. So it's like, you are going to come at me like that? I thought Ishii did a great job kind of piggybacking off of your point with him versus Desperado. I thought it was even stepped up again here because it was much more of a straightforward type of match. And they did more to put Hiromu over as an equal to Ishii than the prior Juniors match with Ishii. I thought this was a great match. Maybe a little lower than those guys. And I'll tell you why. I have one, like, minor criticism. It takes it from, like, a match of the year caliber match to, like, just a great match everybody should watch caliber match. I didn't like the spot where Hiromu locked in the D during the match because I felt, considering where they were going, it kind of killed the match flow, and it really did. It didn't have any real effect on the whole match as a whole. I just thought it was there just to kind of extend time on the match. So I didn't really like that spot. I want to shout out my good friend Joseph Monticello, YouTuber, was on WH's show, The Long and Riding Royal Road, the pre-episode episode. We've talked about this on Twitter. We had the same opinion of this, pretty much, that spot really kind of hurt the match a little bit. But I was actually even higher than he was on it. I still thought this was a great match. And definitely, if this was some kind of audition for Hiromu as a heavyweight, he passed the test here. Great match. And the finish with the time bomb, too, it worked perfectly. And I love that brainbuster style move he did as well. So I thought he did a great job.
Yes, absolutely. And Tomohiro Ishii should always be the gatekeeper for anyone trying to enter the heavyweight division, because he's kind of the in-between between two divisions.
Yeah. Yeah, so, he is. People don't know this, but he was a junior for a while, you know, in New Japan. He was Tiger Mask, or Black Tiger at one point. this was a great match. I thought Ishii was actually even better here. He even stepped up in a loss, and Hiromu did a great job on his own. So I hate these kind of matches. These are the kind of matches that tug at my heartstrings, because it's like, I want Ishii to get his well-deserved title shot. I've been campaigning for that for 4 years since his win over Okada in the G1, and I will continue to want this well-deserved title shot, by God. But also, I want Hiromu to get this push because I want him. I want everybody to think he's ready to move up to the heavyweights because I know he could be that top star in the company. But a great match. I thought I liked Sho versus Shingo better, but this would be my number two match at the tournament, personally, ranking them.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. And to
your I would have no problem if you like this one better, by the way.
Not to your point with the D, I also think that it didn't fit the match because it was basically about Hiromu and Ishii throwing big bombs at one another and not doing a submission game. That was not the topic of the match.
And it just didn't fit this whole deal. Like, kind of like I saw you make this point, too, on the later match with him and Tsuji. Like, Hiromu like locking in the Boston Crab on Tsuji, that just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and like same deal here with the D. It's like Ishii, and basically that's exactly what happened. It's like he sat in it and then easily powered out of it. And it's like, well, why waste all this time doing that? Like, mm-hmm. pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't really work out.
Yeah.
Next up, we had something different, and I gotta say, probably for the best, after this great opening match, to have this kind of story match in the second match of the show. Evil came out to attack Yoshihashi's leg that got injured in the match before. And he attacked him with a chair even before the match started, so he had a pretty easy way through the match. It was stopped by the referee 2 minutes into the match, so Evil advanced to the second round. What did you think about this approach?
I thought this was clearly dictated by Taco's injury to his leg, I feel like. Here he came out limping. He had the leg injury from before. So I thought this was really good. Like, I thought this was a great, it was more of an angle than a match, but I thought it was really well done and put Evil over as a new devastating heelish type of performer that he is now. Like you said, he attacked him with a chair right away, even before the match. Stomped on the chair on his knee. Totally destroyed it. The whole match was basically like, he locked in, he hit him with the chair, and then when they got to the ring, he sweeped his leg and then locked in the Scorpion Deathlock, the Sasori Gatame, and held it. But then, like you said, the referee stopped the match. And I thought it was cool. They gave Yoshihashi an out here, too. He had a really strong tournament, I think. He's somebody that really increased his stock after the Tenzan match. And here, it sucks that he had the injury, and hopefully it's not too serious, because I thought he was doing some really good work. And people were starting to kind of come around on him again, which I've always been a believer in Yoshihashi, as we all know, listening to this. But I felt like a lot of people were starting to come around on him, especially after that Tenzan match. And here they gave him a little bit of an out, so I'm totally happy with how this came out. I thought it was a great angle. It put Evil over. He attacked him after the match, too, so he's fully, heel here, pretty much. And I also liked it. I loved the booking of this, even though I don't love the matchup, and I definitely didn't love the execution of said matchup, but I loved how they differently used Evil and Sonata on this show. It's like Evil is a super heel attacking this young babyface's leg and killing him, and Sonata was like a Superman in his match. So, wow. I mean, we may not have loved the match, but I loved the idea of booking them differently to set up their match, especially between two tag team partners.
Yeah, absolutely. So in between, we had the regular six-man with Naito, Takagi, and Bushi going over Hiroki Goto, Sho, and Yuya Uemura. They once again made sure to set up Shingo versus Sho for the Never Open Weight title. So that is a successful build in the mid-card. You gotta like
that. What'd you think of Bushi's finisher he used in the match?
They described it as a swinging codebreaker. I was kind of surprised that was the finish, but because usually he does this codebreaker thing and then he goes up to the top rope to do the regular MX again. I don't know about it.
Yeah, it was Waimura, the young lion, so yeah. Maybe he didn't want to use the MX on this young lion, but still, I thought it was interesting that he didn't do the MX. I know we've talked about it's not our favorite move.
No.
in New Japan, so now he has kind of like this F, Fireman's Carry spin out into the codebreaker that he did here. So, okay, it was cool. Like you said, I like the setup between Sho and Shingo. Very basic storyline build to these two, and I think it's been totally effective. And I can't wait for the rematch, especially I hope that the crowd can really get into that match and elevate it even more. But Sho is somebody I think has definitely, I mentioned Yoshi earlier, I think Sho has definitely improved his stock. And even me, I look at him totally different now than I would have if he had lost that match. I think he's on a different level. And another guy like Hiromu that looks like he could very easily fit with the heavyweights and be a main star, if not an upper mid-carder.
For him, this tournament definitely was a big win that he was able to showcase his talent in there. And maybe he'll be in like the never division for longer and not just stuck in the tag team for the junior heavyweight tag team title all the time. So but him being in there with the guys like Shingo Takagi, Hiroki Goto, you can put in their Sho, you can put in Hiromu if you want to, Yoshihashi. That's a good ground foundation for a never division.
This is like all my favorite guys in the company. Like you're listing off, like anybody I like is now. Nagata is now in the division. Put them all in there, baby.
Yeah, you can. You can, definitely. So, the next match was one that we were looking forward to when we first talked about the brackets. And I don't think it is a surprise that it eventually came to this match, with Katsuhiko Okada and Taiji Ishimori being two Toriyonom alumni, having a match that, once again, was about Katsuhiko Okada. And not only that, I really was looking forward to the interactions between the two, and when they actually had time to wrestle, they did well, of course, because they are just two good wrestlers. But still, I thought that they should have done just a sweet 10 to 12 minute Toriyonomon style match here in the quarterfinals of the New Japan Cup, just to highlight their history. But much like you talked about that, much like with Kanemaru and Ishimori before, they didn't go into that direction because it was more important to have Ghetto ringside, to have him be the main character of this match again, which totally annoyed me and which totally took away any anticipation of the match that I had before.
I mean, you just described the problem with this match. It was like, you know, number three was Ishimori, two was Okada, number one was Gato.
Yeah.
like the main people in this match. And I don't know why it has to be that way, or why they want it to be that way.
I mean, the thing is, Okada beat Gato. What else is there gonna be happening? Like, are they working towards another singles match now?
I hope not. and you kind of described it. That's the problem. Where I think I said the exact same comment as you. This should have been like a 9 or 10 minute match where they both get over and have a really good competitive match, and it puts Ishimori over, but Okada's not pushed to the limit.
And in this situation, Ghetto did the same that he did for Jay White. He's just there to absorb all the heat. All the attention goes to Ghetto, and the wrestler in the ring is just a little byproduct.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it's tough because even then, it would be hard to go back to that match we just described that we would have liked when they already did a 15-minute Ghetto match versus Okada.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I'm sure he's probably looking at that like, oh, well, the wrestler could get 18 minutes instead of 15 like I got. That'll put him over. But like you said, Gato totally absorbed everything in this match. When they wrestled, I thought it was really strong. So, probably some of Okada's best work, I think, in this tournament was against Ishimori during these brief wrestling segments, but it was all ruined because of the Gato stuff. We know we're not fans of that, and I just don't see what purpose it serves, really. You know, like you said, he's already beat him in a singles match. Why? You know, pretty much. I think people would say something to the effect of, like, well, Okada is the super ace of New Japan, so somebody like Ishimori can't get on offense on him. But I don't think that's true. I think you could have a 9 or 10 minute match, like we said, and have Ishimori do some stuff and elevate him a little bit. He's somebody I think that has really been on the back burner, a very talented wrestler, I feel like, but they didn't put him in position in this tournament to have the matches I know he's capable of, in my opinion. I don't think this was any different, unfortunately. There was good wrestling in there, but like I said, this is another one. This should have been more like an 8, and instead it's like a 5 or a 6 on the cage match scales, you know, so that's just kind of how I felt about it.
Yeah, and then tell me how you felt about the main event.
Zanada
defeated Taichi. Was it? Okay, I had it listed at 28 minutes on Cage Match. 28 minutes on Puro Love, but Cage Match has it listed as 22 minutes, so I gotta check with the official New Japan website here. Maybe I got that wrong on Puro Love.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah, I got it wrong. Oh, it felt even longer to me. It was
it felt like 82 minutes.
Yeah, it was 22 minutes and 50 seconds. And for whatever reason, I typed 27 and 50 on Puro Love. God forbid that this match went almost 28 minutes. But it's still, as you said, it felt so awfully long. And that all has to do with Sanada and his match style. Because much like with Okada, much like we said before, everybody has to have the same match with the Sanada, and it just doesn't work out with everybody. I mean, you can do it with a show, you can do it with a Inoki Goto, you can do it with, I don't know, with Zack Sabre Jr. or Kota Ibushi, but when you have Taichi and have him do all these reversal sequences, that was just a match that was worked in slow motion. And then you had this thing that I said before with the submission. Taichi had to do the skull end, and it looked so horrible because he didn't even have his face clutched. I mean, it just looked like they were just lying on the ground and just like cuddling a bit.
The very aggressive cuddle.
Yes.
Could be new Taichi's new move there. I took this, believe it or not, I hate even saying this. I wish I had said this on the Patreon instead of what I said. I wish I would have just said, oh, he's doing the skull end. That would have made me feel a lot better. Because, to me, I took it as him trying to do the stretch plum, and I said that he has disgraced both Kawada and Plum Mariko now with this move. He's disgraced two legends in one match, Taichi. You've reached a new low. What did you think early on? This just to back up a bit from that, because I don't agree that it was all about Sanada that was wrong with this match. I think both of them were very much to blame, in my opinion, for this match. What did you think about when they did the spot where it's like they had him he had him choked on the outside and all of that, and he went back to the ring, and then Red Shoes is like, "No, I won't count that pin. You cheated." So what does Taichi do? He goes back to choking him again. So it's like, this referee, what sense does this make? Okay, I won't count your pin, but I will let you cheat right in front of me. Like, keep cheating, it's fine, but I won't count your pin right now. You'll have to do it later.
Isn't that what Red Shoes always does?
And I hate it. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, I saw somebody say this was a good thing. Like, that he likes that it's somehow more honorable that he won't do it. It would be more honorable if he disqualified Taichi. Which would have been much better of a match if they had ended it after 6 minutes or whatever as well. But I just, like, I thought that was so stupid. I and you're right that he's done it many times, but I just want to call attention to this because this is one of my least favorite Red Shoe spots, I feel like. Outside of perhaps him getting pulled out of the ring, which has been done to a million times over.
Yeah.
But still, yeah. There was all kinds of stuff going on here. The Paradise Lock was locked in. Sonata's whole moveset is just terrible.
Absolutely terrible, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, everything, he's like he's the Miz of New Japan right now. Like, that's who he is to me. Nothing he does looks like it hurts. He comes across, like, so bored during his matches, and even less charismatic, in my opinion, in the ring. At least Miz tries to be annoying and succeeds most of the time. He even did the one-man magic killer in this match, Sonata did. So, what in the world is going on here? Kanemaru at ringside, too. Of course, we needed our distraction. He was on commentary, so I wonder what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Of course, he runs out to the ring. That's where we had the stretch plum / skull in spot. I thought that at least I kind of liked when he countered the Axe Bomber into the Hurricane Rana. I thought that was a good little near fall.
I mean, there was good parts in this match, definitely. And I gotta say,
very few.
W.H. Park made a great point on his Twitter. He said, Taichi vs. Sanada, battle of the post-Noah Exodus All Japan students. Taichi of the Kawada era and Sanada of the Muto era. One doesn't even come close to his mentor. The other one is too close to his. But once again, I would say that the parts in which Taichi actually did the kicks and did his backdrop suplexes, those were the better parts of the match, in my opinion.
You might be right. Like that's a sad story that you just told. But I may agree with you again here. As crazy as it makes me feel, Yeah, they went with the low blow into the Taichi-style Gato clutch, but Sonata countered that into the Okana roll into the Japanese leg clutch, which he's used multiple times. He used that against Taguchi, mm-hmm. too. So I like that, at least if there is one positive for all of this. The one good thing about Sonata is I like that they establish him as like a flash pin type of guy.
Yeah.
I think that's the best role that he could play, is like somebody with a lot of different variations of pinning predicaments that you could win. I would love to see that explored a little bit more. I think that would be a really good role for him. But overall, I thought this was one of the worst matches of the tournament.
It definitely was not good. And then you gotta question the format of the show, or the placement of the matches on the show, because after they did Hiromu and Ishii in the opening match, I thought it was a good idea to have Evil and Yoshihashi in this storyline segment in between. But then you go to headline the show with this Sanada and Taichi match. If you look at the show overall, it was probably a good one.
Yeah.
But you close it with this overly long Sanada and Taichi match, when you could have closed it with Hiromu Takahashi against Tomohiro Ishii, because it's always the same. When you finish off the show with a strong, strong main event, the feeling of the show in general will be much better than if you start out with a great match and finish it with a rather not so great match.
Yeah, I think they were trying to put over Sonata here, main eventing the show. Like, that was kind of their thinking, but the opener was way better than the main event. There's no question about that. I just think, again, this is another thing I kind of alluded to what I said earlier. Sonata here had to overcome all of these odds. This was a very traditional American wrestling style match in general to me. Like a valiant babyface overcoming cheating, heel interference, bullcrap. He overcome all the odds to win in the end. That's kind of how I took this. Like, they were putting over Sonata as a new babyface, which poses some questions considering what they do on the next show. But that said, I thought that's kind of how I took that. So I understood it a little bit, but I agree. This was a bad note to end the show on. The other match was a lot better. I would have much preferred it as well if Hiromu had been standing tall in the main event and put him over even more.
Yeah, that it would have worked better, in my opinion.
I agree, man.
Yeah, so that's that show. That brings us to the show from July 3rd, earlier today, with a format that I thought actually was pretty well done. And you gotta say that this was the first show in, I think, 20 years of New Japan Pro Wrestling airing on prime time on network television in Japan. And for that show, they brought out a format with four matches, with two multi-man matches that set up title matches for presumably Osaka Joe Hall, and two tournament matches. And once again, to your point, Dylan, that you also made at the beginning of this tournament, they do these multi-man matches, but they only do one or two matches on each show without a unnecessary match where they just throw in guys that they have. I mean, they could have just thrown in, I don't know, Tenzan, Kojima on this show here to have a match with Yoda Tsuji or whatever. But they chose to do something else, and they did an 8-man tag match with Minoru Suzuki, Zack Sabre Jr., Taichi, and El Desperado over Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kota Ibushi, Yuji Nagata, and Gabriel Kidd. And I gotta say that I thought this was a great opening match for this show, especially the parts in which Zack Sabre Jr. and Kota Ibushi wrestled were absolutely great, leading to their tag title match. And of course, Hiroshi Tanahashi played his part in that as well, with Gabriel Kidd and Yuji Nagata assisting them in various points of the match, and Yuji Nagata prolonging his storyline with Minoru Suzuki that they had at the beginning of the tournament. Desperado, in the end, getting a pinfall over Gabriel Kidd. So, basically, all of these eight guys in their match had their fair share of action in here.
First of all, I have to really say congrats to New Japan for having this TV Asahi spot. The return of primetime wrestling coming on for New Japan live on TV. That's really great news, not just for New Japan, but just wrestling in general. And hopefully it can lead to some a higher profile and better reputation in Japan for wrestling, for everybody, maybe, you know, sit around with your family in front of the TV. That's something that I think a lot of people have in their minds when they first started watching wrestling, was like watching it with their dad or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
And I mean, for families, this is an absolutely great TV spot. You know, Fridays, 8 p.m., I mean, mm-hmm. everybody is home, everybody's gathering around, maybe they just had dinner or whatever, and they are sitting down to watch some television, and there's wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot easier to do that on TV Asahi than it is to go on a computer and all gather around.
It's much better than on Nico Nico.
Yes, exactly. Like, there's not a lot of families gathering around a computer. That's just not something that I think is a big thing. Even in 2020, I don't think we're quite there yet, unfortunately. But so I was very happy to see that. I have to say, you know, no matter what you want to say about the tournament, the booking, the matches, whatever, you cannot deny that this has to be considered a great success for New Japan to get back on, especially in an era where there are no fans. Hmm. Now they're going to have that. Like, this is probably going to be the last show without fans. Hopefully, you know, nothing crazy happens where there's any kind of resurgence of the virus or anything in Japan. Hopefully they can still always have fans there and everyone can be safe. But this was the swan song for the empty arena shows. And the opening match, I agree with you, is better than the usual non-existent or, you know, non-important opener, I guess you would say, would be more accurate. I mentioned this before, that I feel like people are more likely to watch these matches when there's only one or two instead of, like, five or six.
Yep.
Because that'll just make you want to skip everything and go right to the important matches. But if it's one or two matches, you say, ah, okay, like, you know, I can watch that. I think that just naturally in human psyche, that's a lot better. I really enjoyed the action here, obviously building up the Dangerous Techers and Tanahashi Ibushi feud. Zach, he's really had an interesting week. That Twitter debacle he was a part of had to be considered a disaster for him on there, where he got flooded with comments and stuff. They had to delete his comment on there. It was a bad look.
It was an absolutely bad look, but, you know, for someone that is so vocal about a lot of social injustices, and that then just go around and be quiet when the talking point is on your playing field, that's mm-hmm. just not a good look. You just got to say that.
Yeah, totally. We talked about this a little bit last week, so I won't harp on it.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
What were they thinking putting this questionnaire up? It would be the follow-up question.
I mean, there has been a lot of talking about reading the room in recent weeks in various topics and in various issues, and there was just someone who did not read the room right.
No, it's clear that a lot of the news must not have made it over to whoever was in Japan, at least running that Twitter account, I would say. But definitely some bad stuff here. And I think a lot of the Western fans are probably going to turn on him, especially when you delete the tweet and you don't, you know, you put this up mm-hmm. and you don't, you know, you delete it. That's like a really bad look. Now it's not just that you're being silent, it's like you're running away from it actively. That makes you look really bad to a lot of people, like even worse, and you already looked bad by staying silent for the reasons we talked about and you just brought up. But still, that said, he worked good in this match, whatever you want to say about him. Personally, he did work very well with Ibushi and Tanahashi in this match, and that should be a great tag match. My favorite part of the matches was actually where Nagata and Suzuki got back at it again, because this is just a tried and true soul food style of wrestling that I always enjoy, and they did it again. Even when Kid got in there, him and Suzuki had a great standoff too, I thought, really good stuff there. So yeah, this was a very good opening match, even though the stuff was Saber is going to be kind of like a black cloud hanging over him for a while. I think the wrestling was really strong here.
Absolutely it was. And you can say the same about the next match. We had Hiroki Goto, Tomohiro Ishii, and Sho, the Chaos Team, going over Los Ingobernables de Japón, Tetsu Naito, Shingo Takagi, and Bushi, when Sho pinned Bushi with a shock arrow. Once again, just a great six-man tag match, great interactions once again with all the participants that were in the match. Naito holding back a little, but Shingo and Sho throwing out much more than him, of course. And in the end, there was this clear sign that Sho is now challenging for the NEVER Openweight title. So we got much more out of this Shingo and Sho story that we even imagined going into this tournament.
I'm so happy. I wish we had thought of it at the
time.
Yeah,
well, yeah, we talked about that last episode,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you know, it makes total sense, and I love the way they built this. It's totally simple. It's not anything crazy. You know, there's no, you know, low blows or weapon attacks or anything like that. It's just a very basic build-up to the feud. Now they get to decide it all for the title, and it sure looks like a great way to use this empty arena setup to have these two very intense and well-matched competitors. I think the fans are going to really elevate their next match and go crazy with it when that happens, so I cannot wait for the match. Love the build-up. Just Ed Show gets the win over Bushi. Who better to take a fall in New Japan than Bushi? So it was good stuff there. Love the build-up with them standing off. Love Show hitting the spear after the match. It really made him look strong and somebody that the fans can believe in. It was really good stuff there. And now we get my main event coming up on this show.
The main event of the show, right here in the middle. Yes. We got a different version of the Grandmaster video that has been playing all tour long. And we got the big reveal on the video screen that the Grandmaster is indeed, as everybody had suspected, it is Hirai Kawato returning from his excursion to be the Grandmaster, and people had figured, oh god, no, are they really calling him the Grandmaster? And no.
Even better.
It's even worse.
Oh.
It's even fucking worse. I mean, Dylan, come on, what is worse? Being called Kawato-san and playing off the regular Japanese gimmick in Mexico, or this one with Master Wato? What even is a Master Wato is the question. And I had two people immediately making the Wato joke from Star Wars.
Yes. Very popular online after this debut. Very popular. I love it.
And then he comes out. And he has this blue gear. And, you know, we talked about that on the beginning of the show, looking like a Blue Ranger.
Yes.
That is something else. I mean, the colorful gimmicks, you know. It is one thing to have a colorful gimmick like this on your show, but I think we've talked about this on previous episodes too. It seems that the people in charge of New Japan Pro Wrestling, they have this addiction of presenting new gimmicks, and they have this idea that everybody returning has to have a fancy gimmick. And when you look at the 90s, we've made Weeks of Lariats on our Patreon about the Three Musketeers. In the 90s, you had the fat guy that went over with the fans because he was such a great wrestler. He was Fat Elvis. You had the cool guy with the sunglasses, and that's completely okay. He was a character. And you had the balding middle-aged guy who tried to get over his midlife crisis by painting his face. And that's okay, too. But you never had these weird, colorful gimmicks that you have now all the time. And when you have these gimmicks all the time, nobody stands out. I mean, Sho and Yo returned from their excursion from being Yoe Komatsu and Sho Tanaka, being the pop stars in Roppongi 3K. You have Switchblade returning, or Jay White returning as Switchblade with this gimmick. We talked about El Desperado on one of our recent shows, too. You can also group in this category too. Then you have Evil and Zanada. They also are just two overly gimmicked wrestlers now, especially Evil. And we always talk about how Evil just makes it work because he's so good. But still, though, he's also part of this problem.
You said that.
I think I said that.
Don't let me up. but
he definitely is also part of this problem. And then you also have other people on this roster, like, for example, Okada with his glowing jacket, and Hiromu Takahashi just being this colorful character too. And now you have Hirai Kawato returning, and he's supposed to be one, once again, another of these colorful characters. And that just can't work out with everybody playing the same direction of the gimmick. Why can't he just return and be Hirai Kawato and beat people up?
I mean, that's a wonderful question, Striga. I wish I had these answers. We even mentioned, like, you know, the guys that have really elevated themselves are the ones, you know, Hiromu is a crazy character, but he's still himself.
Yes.
You know, Kawato is not going around in real life saying he's Master Watto. At least I hope he's not doing that in real life. Or he will be disowned.
In his passport his, now.
Yes. Yes.
He's now Master Watto.
You mentioned in Mexico, like the way they announced him, it was like, yes, Kawato-san, but it wasn't like, you know, Kawato-san. It was more like Kawato-san. Like, San was his last name.
Ah, like, I see.
Like, you know, Dylan Fox. Like, it was Kawato-san. Mm-hmm. So it was like, they kind of, it was more of a misunderstanding than anything, but a very goofy one at that. This Grandmaster stuff, what did you make when you first saw these videos? Like right away? Because basically it's like, they have this very dramatic movie announcer saying, "We shall overcome." And it shows him running in the woods somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, and then we see the Grandmaster is coming. What did you think of this gimmick when you first saw it? What is he supposed to be?
Is he a poor but yet colorful attempt at Karate Kid?
I thought you were just going to say he was very poor. Like he just lives in the woods. He's a crazy... His name is Plays with Squirrels. That is his
gimmick. I mean, the worst fear that I have is that he's supposed to be some kind of wizard now.
Oh my god.
a martial arts wizard.
That's...
What was your takeaway from that?
He has blue hair now. Like all blue attire, so they've color coded him. I'm a fan of like the color coded in the gear because that's like an All Japan in the 90s. You know, Misawa with the green, Kobashi with the orange, blah blah blah.
Misawa never had green hair.
Exactly. Like there's a limit to this. You know, when you start to look goofy, and Kawato has far over exceeded those limits with the name, the hair. He comes in, and what about this debut? This debut shows me that they think he's a joke. And they have no plans for him to be.
I mean, when you return to New Japan Pro Wrestling to get beaten down by Doki, I mean, I get behind Doki because I've been following him ever since he was on the indies in Japan all the time. That's why I kind of have a thing for Doki. But he's the lowest member of Suzuki-gun. And you return to New Japan and get beaten up by Doki. What does it tell you? I mean, it tells you what you just said.
And I have a soft spot for Doki, too. Like, yeah. Having this Japanese guy wrestling on the Mexican indies and then somehow made it to the New Japan, I cannot completely dislike him.
Yeah.
But, you know, just like you said, in the world of New Japan booking, he's at the bottom of the totem pole. And Kawato just comes out. No fans, keep in mind here, for this.
I mean, that was probably the best part about his return, that there were no fans to laugh at him.
That is true. That would have been awesome if that had happened.
The Kai treatment.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Like, perhaps even worse here. But yeah, so he comes out, and he strikes this goofy, like, he watched one kung fu movie. Mm-hmm. And he strikes this goofy attempt at a karate pose or a martial arts pose. And then Doki just runs up with his steel thing, like his cane or whatever, mm-hmm. that he beats the crap out of him, totally leaves him laying. Kawato, or Master Watto, is now a complete joke of New Japan. This is like the replacement for Captain New Japan, I feel like. Like that's what he feels like to me. Like, every opening match, he's going to strike some stupid martial arts pose and get beaten down. I can see it in my head happening. This is our future of opening matches. Once they have the fans back and bring back all the meaningless undercard matches, that's where he's going. Right into eight-man tag openers to
yeah.
do the stupid
I mean,
spot and get laughed at.
We'll probably see the singles match in Osaka Joe Hall with Doki, I'd assume. They would do that there.
Right.
Imagine that. Imagine a regular Osaka Joe Hall show with Doki and Hirai Kawato or Master Watto in a match. I mean, wow.
Is that going to be showed on primetime TV?
I hope not. But what's the ceiling for this character?
I mean, I just told you. that's exactly the ceiling for it. I feel like you can't push him. As this, like, you cannot give him a title, like, any kind of title potential as Master Watto.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, right? Like, am I wrong?
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I can't see how you can seriously push the guy, even in the not so great junior division in New Japan. He'd still be a joke.
No, he's at the bottom of the barrel, no matter what junior division he's in. Like, he had such a great run as a young lion, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the crazy thing. He was super over as a babyface. He had something that you can't really teach in a wrestler. I always saw that in him. There's no question his Mexico run didn't go according to plan at all. And I always thought that they really miscast him as a heel. And I just thought that he really struggled in that role, and the Lucha style wasn't for him. If he got back to Japan, worked as a babyface again, an underdog, like Yoshihashi-esque, like babyface, an underdog guy that, you know, is fiery and can fight against bigger guys. That should be his role, not the Grandmaster, like either a martial arts genius or a wizard, as you have predicted. Neither of those roles fit. And he's not a martial artist in real life, is he? Does he have any background?
Oh, in that? I would have to look that up quickly.
Okay, let's find out. God. Maybe this is something. Maybe this is his idea. He has a martial arts background.
I don't think he has.
I don't think he does either. He never showed that, and they never talked about that when he was still in Japan. So maybe it's a secret martial arts. Maybe he learned them in the woods. And so this is an unofficial martial arts background, and he said, I must bring this to wrestling.
Let's see on his Japanese profile what it says there. Yes, river people, I know. Oh, he actually has a judo background.
Oh, okay. That's not a you know, train in the woods.
Martin. No,
like, you know, like that's not something. That's not, no kung fu movie has made where a judoka has ran into the woods to train with the grandmaster of judo.
Not really.
Maybe there has been, but if there was, I missed it. I would like to apologize. And I know we'll get corrected if there is one out there, but I don't.
The problem
I feel strongly that there is no grandmaster of judo that lives in the woods in movies or life. But if there is, I will watch that movie and review it on Patreon if that movie exists.
So when they introduced Hirai Kawato in 2015 on the New Japan website, it says that he has mixed martial arts experience for 4 years and first stage judo experience, whatever that means.
That would probably be like, you know, a white belt or something like that.
Yeah,
in the martial arts world. He's not the grandmaster.
No.
Right? Like, first stage is not grandmaster level of judoka.
Well, we'll see how that goes. Definitely not very convincing debut.
It wasn't the best, to say the least. But it did lead to a lot of very funny reactions, and you know, maybe that was all about. It was just to amuse themselves. Gato's like, man, we have enough stars. We need one goofy guy on the roster, or we need another goofy guy because we already have like five of them. So let's have another one.
Semifinal. King of Darkness, Evil defeats Sanada. 20 minutes, 13 seconds with the Evil. I gotta give them that they seemingly now do something with their ever-going Los Ingobernables, I don't do the fist bump thing. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't Evil who didn't do the fist bump. It was the Hiro Takahashi who didn't do it. But it seems like that Evil is really going in a dark direction now. That he's supposed to be really evil.
I knew you were waiting to say that.
It's actually evil now.
Yes.
And I was sitting there and watching the match, and for the first 10 minutes, did anything happen in the first 10 minutes?
Evil pulled out a chair for under the ring. They had a little bit of a handshake, but
yeah. They did this thing where Sanada held the ropes open for Evil, and Evil got into the ring looking suspiciously, wanted to attack Sanada. Sanada struck first, and they wrestled around for like the first 10 minutes, I'd say.
Yeah, like I said, they had the ring post thing with the chair that Evil always does.
Yeah.
The referee was there, so you know, like you said, they wrestled around for a little while.
And then it kind of broke down to Evil resorting to his evil tactics, but even more evil than they usually are, because it was against his own stablemate in Zanada, and he, again, he attacked him with a chair. They did a low blow. Then some more chair attacks with the chair wrapped around the head of Zanada, which then ultimately led to Evil finishing off with his STO with the evil and the word evil. I mean, take a shot for every time I say the word evil and you'll be drunk after 5 minutes. This was not a good match. I didn't like this at all. I thought this sucked.
It wasn't the best. Let's just say this. Did you like when Evil did his referee assisted magic killer, and Marty Asami like took a flip bump off of it?
I mean, I was gonna make that point earlier too when you said that Zanada did his own version of the magic killer. These versions of the magic killer totally destroy any value that the magic killer would have as a tag team move, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
completely agree.
If you're able to do it alone, why would it be a tag team finisher?
The difference is you're a willing participant in a tag team. The referee had no idea what's going on. You know, like he never expected it.
No,
he thought it was.
It only happens in every second match to Marty Asami, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he forgot about all that. So this is somebody who's taking. You know, he's getting older. He can't remember things as much as he used to. He's probably bored of all these matches that has all these interferences in them. So he just tries to forget. He drinks a lot. He tries to forget.
Oh, I was not going to go in that direction, but thank you. But you did.
I'm writing my own story right now of New Japan.
See.
This is how I explain it. Because how else do you explain it, Striga? It happens every match, pretty much.
They have this thing like in Men in Black, where you black out everything that happened before.
Oh, yeah, I think he was also abducted by aliens.
Absolutely.
And that's why he forgets this.
Maybe Master Wato was part of that story, too.
Yes. okay. anyway, moving on from that. Yeah, so this wasn't a great match, to say the least. They did a thing where what did you think of Sanada's attempt at a Shiranui here?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, that looked really horrifying, because he slipped and they tried to save it, but while trying to save it, Evil landed pretty safely and pretty flat on his back, but he still had Zanada on top of him, and Zanada landed like right away on his shoulder, and it really looked like that what came to my mind immediately was that he may have separated his shoulder.
Yeah, it was a really bad landing, to say the least. This was not a great tournament for Sanada, like in-ring style.
And imagine him now going over in this match, and then it turns out that he has, in fact, separated his shoulder.
That's another thing. We don't really know what the injury status was, and I mentioned this online, where everyone was like, what the? like, when this happened? Most of them were like, oh, crap, Okada's going to win. But, like, to me, it's like, I can't get that upset about it, because we don't know. And I wouldn't be surprised if they were double gun-shy after what happened to Yoshihashi.
Mm.
Like, if Sanada, there's any chance that he could have a devastating injury, which it definitely looked like something bad could have happened out of that, we don't know. So this is all speculation. But there's no telling what, we just don't know. So they may have been a little bit gun-shy, regardless of what the original plan was. That's just speculation on my part. But they did tell a story with Evil here. You know, I wonder what they're going to do with this story, ultimately.
I mean, they now gave themselves an out to defeat Okada in the finals, with Evil going to all these tactics.
Absolutely.
So, I think that is a way that you can get behind this Evil storyline. But in the matches, I mean, against Yoshihashi, it totally worked out because of the circumstances. But in this case, it was just so mind-boggling to see that all of that happening here with Zanada.
Absolutely. I don't think it was the right way to approach these matches, but they're telling a story, so I can't... Mm. I want to see where it goes, you know, ultimately. I don't want to judge this before the finishing stretch of it, you know? Because we don't know what's going to happen. But if he just loses to Okada, and all of this gets forgotten about, and LIJ is all on the same page again, then this was completely stupid, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's the fear that I have, because it always happens, right?
Yeah, exactly, and I think that's very, very likely that that's exactly how this is going to turn out.
Yeah. What do you think about the main event? We had Katsushika Okada defeating Hiromu Takahashi in 27 minutes. Referee stop in the modified Cobra Clutch, so Hiromu Takahashi did not tap out. An almost 30-minute match. What do you think?
Very disappointing, but not bad. I will say that.
I will absolutely agree with that, and I'll be interested in what you have to say about it.
It's clear to me that they were saving a lot of what they could do for a bigger match in the future, to me.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. Yeah, but you can go on. It sounds like you have a lot to say about this.
Yeah, I was just going to make the point that I have no idea why they did that, because when you remember that they have this primetime TV spot now, wouldn't you want to put on the greatest match possible that you can have between the two?
But maybe to them, an Okada epic is the greatest match they can have.
Maybe.
I don't agree with that. I'm not defending it. I'm just saying that that's maybe what they were thinking. That, man, we want to see Okada's had so many great matches that were just like the Sonata match, even though that was with the crowd. The crowd really made that match in a lot of ways. But, you know, you have all these other matches that were really long, and they've done it so many times with Tanahashi. Maybe this is the best match that New Japan can put on in front of a now-televised audience countrywide. There are no fans, but it didn't seem to deter them very much here. But to me, if they were really worried, I think the no-fan stuff isn't as much of a big deal to Gato and whoever's booking this as maybe it is to us. Because to me, if that was a problem, why are they even doing this match in the first place?
Hmm.
Like Hiromu and Okada. And why is Okada potentially going to face Naito, which we talked about at the start of the tournament was a former Dome match. So to me, that clearly isn't a big deal to whoever's booking this, and you know, just based on these results.
See, and that's another point. They have this TV audience now that is probably thinking, or that is seeing Okada, and that has probably seen Okada before in whatever commercials they ran before as being the big star of the company. And you have him go against this other guy, Hiromu Takahashi. And while he came close, wouldn't it have been such a great impact for New Japan on this grand stage to put over another guy and have him beat the big star in this semifinal here?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about what you just said there.
I mean, they have a chance to do something else, to do something different than they usually do, but they chose to go in the direction they always go with Okada being successful.
And I was arguing with someone else about this online before we started recording. I was saying that, isn't this the perfect time to go with someone new?
Absolutely.
Like that, you know, like there's no fans. They're going to sell out like for what they can for the new first show back, no matter who you put in there. So why wouldn't you take a chance on elevating somebody to that level? And I get about telling long stories and everything. Like Hiromu one day is probably going to get there. That's fine.
Absolutely, but, and that is the thinking behind that. We know that's the thinking behind it, because it's always the thinking behind that. Mm-hmm. But
why not? Why not now?
At some point, this thinking may have to go out of the window, because it has been the same strategy all over again, and maybe you'll just have to pull the trigger on some guy eventually.
I wish they would. But like I said, and like now to me felt like the perfect time more than any other one, because there's no risk involved
and,
to putting Hiromu over here.
And you know, there is always the risk that pulling the trigger may never come, because if you look at some of the guys in this tournament on this roster, like Zanada, for example, is in this hellhole of a waiting pattern for 4 years now.
Like I said, I'm the one in the hellhole watching his matches. I feel like. But no,
that just may be purgatory, but he's in the actual hellhole.
Yes, Goto is another one, like all the way dating back to him. Because I used to hear that all the time, that his day will come. It never came, ultimately. So it's like, I get what you're saying. Like, there is always a fear that that day will not come if you are not one of their chosen ones. Unfortunately, it feels like here we've got the traditional one. I don't necessarily mind it. I don't hate it as much as some people did, because a lot of people were like, ah. But to me, Hiromu came across, he did benefit from this tournament, so I want to keep that in perspective.
Yes, absolutely true. Yeah. But I think they had the chance to do something big, and they didn't.
Yeah, and it would have made so much sense to do it. Like that's what's kind of like why I go back and forth on it, because in my head I think he will get there one day, and he's a great worker, and he's an amazing talent, blah, blah, blah. But to me, it's like, this was the time. Like, they had the opportunity. They had the perfect storyline, too, for him to go after Naito, after their match got taken away. And he was the one, when they weren't doing any wrestling for those 3 months, he was practically their top, you know, guy they were advertising on social media, was Hiromu.
Playing devil's advocate here, you could say that they played it safe in this environment now, and they went with what they know works out, because, as you said, they didn't have the crowd reactions here. So they went with what they know with Okada, and they may have saved the reaction that Hiromu Takahashi could get for a big tournament victory for later down the line when the fans are actually in attendance. And that is something that I can see too, but I agree with you that it absolutely felt like the perfect time to do it now, because remember when we talked about the brackets, we discussed that Hiromu Takahashi was the one that stood out to us in this tournament, because they still had this Naito and Hiromu match waiting for us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Just like we said then, and I think it was still true. I think, like I said, one day they'll get there, but
Will he be so hot then at this point, and will he be at his physical peak in the future?
You could say that about Naito winning the title
over
Okada in the Tokyo Dome.
We talked about that.
Yeah, and we did. Yes, exactly. Like, we did, and I know many other people did too. And I think, you know, you look at that, and that goes exactly to your point. I really have to agree with you. I'm just trying to, get in their mind on why they would do this. Okada, to me, has never been that guy to me anyway. There's a lot of metrics that show he's never been the number one star, and that Naito's more popular, and Tanahashi was more popular before him. And yet, we always go to Okada. So I don't know what the deal is, ultimately, with that. And here, like you said, I think what you said about them going to what they know was this match in general. Like, this is Okada knows, and that's what they went with, ultimately. More so than the booking. But the match was fine. For what it was, it wasn't a great match, in my opinion. I don't think Okada has had any great matches in this tournament.
I got a number for you. In fact, 8.56.
Well, I mean, people buy into him, you know. Whatever argument we want to have, the Western fans and fans all over the world, they buy into this style of match. I think that's what, to me, Okada style of match is what a lot of people think a great match is. Even if, like you said, to us, it's not as exciting, not as fresh. To me, it was never my favorite style. Yeah. But for whatever reason, the people buy into it. So I don't hate this as much as a lot of people. Again, I want to reiterate that, even though I agree with you, ultimately. Like, if it were, again, if this was Eastern Lariat's New Japan, Hiromu would have won, and it would have been a lot better match. But in the real New Japan, this is what I expected to happen, and that's what they gave us, ultimately.
I mean, going back to my point that I made about Ishimori and Okada before, I would have absolutely loved this match in a setting where it was between 10 and 15 minutes, where they just threw everything they had at one another and had great lucha sequences, because they had these sequences in the match.
You're correct.
And they had the eventual great moment in the match. The moment that will stick the most probably of the match will be Hiromu Takahashi hitting the Rainmaker on Okada and getting a two counter out of that. That was absolutely amazing.
Yep.
But everything before that, the first 10 minutes, once again, here, it was basically them doing a forearm battle, a slow forearm battle, you gotta say.
Yeah.
And a slow match is absolutely nothing that plays well for Hiromu Takahashi, because he's not a guy to do a slow and methodic technical or even a striking duel. That's not his style of match. And they should have known that. But instead, he once again had to go to the Okada formula to play by his rules, and Okada doing the same match over again with another opponent that in some instances was able to do what he does best, but overall he then again had to fall victim to the Rainmaker in various attempts by Okada. So I agree with you that the match was probably all right, but they could have done so much more. And
yeah,
once again, I get why they probably did that, to have another match down the line, but they didn't have to leave so much on the table. They had an out with the Cobra Clutch that Hiromu didn't tap out in. That, in my opinion, would have totally been enough for an out and for another match down the line. So teasing so much stuff and not going through it, I don't know. I don't know about this entire approach of this match.
Yeah.
I mean, you can always go to the explanation that they left something on the table on purpose, but maybe they just didn't have anything else in this on this day here.
Maybe we'll have a very similar match when they face again, another 27-minute match, and then next time they face again, because yeah, it's an Okada match, ultimately. And like I said, to me, I just, out of all the people, we mentioned guys that have really improved their stock in this tournament, I just, how could anybody be excited by Okada going for this title again? Or, like, both double titles? And I bet a lot of people were, like, speculating again now. The finals have not happened yet. He may lose. And as you mentioned, they have a storyline setup for Evil to win with his evil tactics to jump on Europe. Since that's the word of the day.
Is that happening?
I think Okada's going to win.
You think Okada's going to win?
Yeah.
I mean, when we talked about the tournament, I couldn't really see that they would do Naito and Okada. But maybe they'll just go with their original plan for Osaka Joe Hall and just do Okada and Naito. I mean, I can totally see that, with Gedo just not changing around his plans now.
I didn't think they would do Okada and Hiromu, to be honest with you. I thought that was a match well worth saving, but it happened. As I mentioned, I don't think, and they just did the same match as we expected and as they always do. To me, this empty arena stuff is not, and this is just my opinion, and based on, it's not an opinion, it's based on what has happened. To me, that appears to not be a very big deal to Gato. The empty arena, we can't do it, we have to save stuff. And in some ways, I kind of get it, because to me, this big show, Dominion, this is their era of New Japan is back.
Yeah.
Like, for real. So I could get wanting to put your best foot forward, but from a business perspective, it's just like, you know, to me it also signifies something else. I mentioned this on Twitter too, that the brand is the draw, more like to Gato booking this, and I agree with that. Like, if that's his thinking, I do think the New Japan name has weight above nearly everybody on the roster. But outside of maybe Naito, who's a big merchandise seller and the LIJ group is still hot. And I also think that is going to be, if that happens, let's say Okada wins over Evil. I'm not saying it will, I'm just speculating right now. That match with Naito is going to be so heated with whoever's in the crowd, because I know a lot of LIJ fans are going to be thinking Okada can win those titles. That's a real possibility based on prior booking.
Yep.
But I think if you ask me what's going to happen, I would think that Okada's going to win the tournament and that Naito's going to retain. But I can see the fear being there if indeed
I mean,
Okada
they will play with this fear, because you said it's a real threat. And in comparison to that, I'm sorry, but Evil would not be a threat.
Exactly. That's exactly why I think Okada's going to win. Because I just don't think Evil, like, he's got a good push, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there's no way he's becoming double champion.
I mean, it's the perfect setup for a heel antagonist role that they have done with Evil now. He's been cheating his way through the tournament, looked good too, and now faces the big babyface star, or the supposed babyface star. No? So he is going to be the obstacle that Okada has to conquer before he goes for the boss in the end, for Naito.
I kind of mentioned this on the Patreon show, the last one I did, that it makes perfect sense for Okada to beat Hiromu, Evil, then Naito.
Yeah.
And who is left for him of the LIJ members that he hasn't faced?
Zanada.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Bushi.
Of course. Bushi is the obvious next candidate. But, you know, it's like, you know, you have the three guys that you beat. All the LIJ guys in a row. So it's a good storyline there, but you also have a storyline with Evil, like that you have beaten Sonata already, like, and you could say that I am moving up in the group or whatever. We just don't know how this is all going to play in the inter-LIJ politics, either, of this storyline. So it'll be interesting. Who do you think is going to win, Evil or Okada?
You have convinced me that Okada is going to win.
I don't mean to do that.
I mean, I can still see the scenario where Evil wins, because in my mind, doing Naito and Okada as the main event of such a small crowd in Osaka Joe Hall doesn't feel right to me.
Mm-hmm.
So Naito and Evil would be a good holding pattern match, you know?
I agree.
And to bring Naito back as champion, get a strong victory over Evil, that would work out too, in my opinion. So I'm not totally against Evil making it over Okada.
Let me ask you then, let's just say, we're more speculation right now. Let's say that happens. Evil beats Okada through some evil tactics right now to beat him, and he goes against Naito, and Naito wins, and then Evil fist bumps Naito, and all is right with the world, and LIJ's back. Like, where would they go from Naito beating Evil then, after all of this?
Yeah, there's can't even, I don't know what I'm supposed to say to that. But once again, that is an absolutely realistic option, mm-hmm. because they've done it so often in the past, where they're in a dispute between LIJ was just, in the end, nothing.
Or would there be some kind of turn, like permanently, like Evil's like, I'm
out. I mean,
out.
There has to be at some point some kind of turn.
We would hope so. to me, they had a great storyline with Shingo, but they kind of they have a, and I love what they're doing with him and Sho, don't get me wrong, but they kind of had that for him. So now Evil's doing this heel gimmick. There's at least I can buy Evil winning for all the reasons you said. I think both of these two have an equal shot to win for the reasons I stated about Okada as well. I think Okada's going to win, but it's totally realistic that Evil can win. I just think that the match is going to be a lot hotter for Okada and Naito, but maybe that's something they want to save, you know? Like, they want to save that for later, and you have to remember, too, let me ask you this question, regardless of who wins, like, now it doesn't even matter for this question, do you think, like, when will the next title shot be? There should be one more after this, before the G1.
That would be the G1 starting in mid-October, right? So, right. That would be King of Pro Wrestling in early October, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe they do a show in September. Maybe. Have they announced that King of Pro Wrestling is happening?
Let's see what the schedule is.
Let's go to the schedule.
I don't think... there's Summer Struggle from July 26 to August 16. And the final show of that is in Twin Mesa Shizuoka. They're not going to do a patch shot there. And then they have the G1 set up from September 19 to October 18. So maybe they'll do something in the summer, but I don't...
It's possible that there's not another one starting September.
Maybe they will do one in Nagoya on the 25th of July in the Aoichi Prefectural Gymnasium. That is a big arena.
Yeah, that could definitely happen. Maybe have the first show with full fans would be the title shot.
But that would only be 2 weeks after the title match, and that's unprecedented in the recent years.
Yeah, a little soon. This is a weird time, so nobody knows for sure how they're going to handle all this. But I think it's very possible that there is at most one, maybe even no more title shots. So they are going to have to figure it out when it comes to the tournament, and that may be something. So it's not like you could do a King of Pro Wrestling this year where you're saving an Okada title shot for then. You know, so I don't know what they're going to do. Overall, though, how do you think that this how would you grade this tournament? Yeah. I asked the people online about it.
I was going to go to that, and we had a lot of different reactions. For first,
very varied opinions. Thank you to all the listeners.
Yeah,
out
thank
there.
You. Of course, thank you. Yeah, first you asked how excited are you about the Evil Okada final, and we have everything between a minus 10 and a 9. I guess that shows how different the people or the listeners saw that match. My excitement for an Evil Okada finish is kind of in the middle. I'm kind of in anticipation of that, even though I fear that it's going to be a regular Okada match, but with Evil and his nefarious tactics, Dylan, there may be something that I can hold onto. So I would say, for the first question, I'd say 5.
I gave this a 2 online, and I'll tell you why. I was going to give it 0. Because I don't want to see more Okada normal matches, and I definitely don't want to see any more matches like Evil and Sonata. So that right away was bad. But they had a great match in the G1 a couple of years ago that I will always remember as a great match.
Yep.
I think really turned a lot of people onto Evil in the first place. Their title match they had wasn't that great. That was more like a 4 or 5, like kind of in your level. But I remember that amazing G1 match that they had, which was one of the best of the tournament. Things might not have been going as great for Evil lately, but I still think that it's possible they could pull something special out there in front of the fans. Hopefully they're motivated to do something different, and maybe the storyline stuff, maybe they'll just focus on their actual wrestling. I gave it a 2 with, like, that's like, I really think it's probably going to be kind of bad, but I have a hope that they can pull something great out there. But yeah, there were a lot of different responses. I wouldn't say -10, but that you could tell he really didn't like how this played out. We had a 0. A lot of, like, most of the answers are like 4 to 7, pretty much, you know. Yeah. Like, you know, nobody's too crazy over it. There's been no 10s. I will say that. There are no actual 10s. There's a -10, but no actual 10s. But some 8s.
Isn't a negative 10 an actual 10?
I guess you're right. So 10 out of 10, baby, for this match. But there were a couple of 8s. There was even a 9 for it. So some people are very excited about it. I think Evil is kind of a guy that they don't associate with a main event player. So seeing him in an unexpected guy, a lot of people, too, I think, really are anti-Sonata right now. So to see Sonata lose and a new guy come in, I think also makes people happy.
I mean, Sonata didn't really convince anyone in this tournament.
No.
So
I
can see the regular Sonata criticism. It's totally understandable at this point right now.
Yeah, somebody even left a comment say, I'm certainly more into Okada and Evil than Okada and Sonata.
Oh yeah, I gotta say that. If they had done Okada and Sonata, I would have said 2 or 1.
No, he does follow up. He says, though I could kind of do with less of the dick punching, I get it. He's turning heel. So shout out to @forkboy84 for this one.
An absolute great tweet. Yes.
Yes. A 10 out of 10 tweet.
Yes. That one. Positive 10.
I'm going to Cage Match to give that tweet a 10 right now. But most of the reactions are within 4 to 7. A couple of high ones and a couple of really low ones. I'm on the lower end, but you're right. You're right where pretty much everyone is. Number 2, how much have you enjoyed the tournament overall?
See, there were some really lackluster shows as of late.
Yeah, they really kind of sputtered to the finish.
They totally dropped the ball. Format of the tournament itself was so great. I mentioned that at the beginning of the show, with just few multi-man matches and the tournament matches headlining. No bullcrap in the undercards. You said it too.
Yep.
So the format was there to really excel. But they've done so many storyline matches, and they've done so many of the same match patterns all over again. I mean, how many ref bumps have we seen in this tournament? And sometimes we've seen ref bumps in back-to-back matches. So I was excited for the tournament in the beginning, but my excitement level really dropped off recently. We had some great moments with Ishii and Hiromu. We had great matches like Sho and Shingo, like Yuji Nagata and Minoru Suzuki, but most of them were early in the tournament.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And in the middle of the tournament, they started doing that Evil storyline that didn't really play well. And also Sanada and Taichi had this bad match that we talked about. So, I don't know. I may again go for the middle ground and say 5 out of 10.
I agree with you completely. Like, I had the, this as a 5 out of 10 tournament. It's like, the moments, there were high highs, but some low lows. Mm. And it just feels like, you know, I guess we can finally put the lid on that after the final, depending on what happens. But to me, an Okada win, it really helps nothing. it doesn't help the company. It doesn't help the fans. It doesn't help. Even Okada doesn't gain anything from it, in my opinion. To me, you should always try and elevate people. And I think there have been some guys that have made the most of their time. To me, people stand out. Sho, Hiromu, top two. Evil, I think if they are serious about this, I would put him as a 3, but if he's just going to lose, then all we had was bad matches that came out of this with dick punching. And we don't need that. We don't need more of that in New Japan. I completely agree with Forkboy on this. I guess Yoshi would probably be my 3B, but he had a terrible injury. So he didn't gain a lot. But after that, who really gained from the tournament?
Man, Sho did, even though he...
No. I'm saying Sho and Hiromu. After those two, who
after
gained?
Those two, yeah.
Yeah. Nobody. Based on that.
I mean, I don't know.
The tag title match was well built up.
Yeah.
In the tournament. Whatever you want to say about Taichi, and I didn't love his wrestling, but they built the title match well throughout the tournament. I will give him that.
They did.
Yeah.
You can, of course, say Evil because he made it to the finals and he's kind of turning. Hmm.
I think we can determine that in like a week or two.
Yeah.
Like if he benefits from it too, though.
Yeah, you know, I don't know.
It's a 5 out of 10 tournament, but a lot of people were actually more positive on that than the final itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of 8s, you know, 7s, 8s, 6s, a couple of 5s in there to fit with us, but nothing lower than a 5 on the tournament. So, even a 9.
That surprised me, to be quite honest.
Yeah, me too, because like you said, I really think, but look at the cage match rating on Okada and Hiromu.
Mm-hmm.
That was way higher than I think we probably would have graded it, but I think the fans might have been more into that, and I think Hiromu's a fresh guy, seeing him get a long push, and I agree that he totally benefited from this tournament, but I wasn't a big fan of the match for the reasons we already said, and I agree with you. The positive reaction that we've gotten on our forum, on Twitter, was a little bit surprising to me too, especially compared to the finals. I think you would probably be similar on both, but much like you gave double 5s.
Mm.
And yeah, but the fans seem to be into it for whatever reason. And I also think too, maybe a good reason for that is that a lot of fans are happy just to have New Japan back after
yeah,
all those.
Yeah, I can get that. I totally understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's well, nothing wrong with that.
No.
Like, I mean, I could feel you on that. I'm really excited. Yeah,
For example, user at Chetty says, 9, I've missed New Japan so much. This has been a good return.
Ah, see? Yeah. See, there you go. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that opinion at all to have. And I'm still, I have to say, even though the tournament wasn't, like I said, it was more up and down, kind of a schizophrenic type of tournament, I'm excited for the show with the fans to come back. I can't wait to see how they pull it off in Dominion, even though it's not full capacity. Still, like, New Japan's back.
Yes.
So I hope that it goes great.
So Dominion will have been 7 and 9 matches. So besides the final between Okada and Evil, we'll get the Never Openweight title match, I'd say. We get the IWGP Tag Team title match. What else, Dylan? What else could we see?
Doki and Master Wato.
Oh yeah, right. Of course. Yeah. Could I forget?
We can't forget that.
So we booked half the card, and then they'll probably do some more six-mans.
Yeah.
And that should be it. Maybe they'll throw in a junior heavyweight tag team title match.
I think RPG is the champions.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, see, so our show's gonna work double, baby.
maybe he will.
Yeah. I kind of wish they would keep the format, though. Like, just have one kind of, like, undercard type of match before the big matches.
Yeah, they already announced they won't.
Well, okay. I said I want them to do it. I didn't say they would listen to me. Gato, I know you're a listener of the Eastern Lariat. He's told me many times, Stringer, that he's a huge fan.
He is, yeah.
And always make sure to not listen to me when I tell him to do things. But I got to give it up to him for having the good format of the tournament too. I think that's a major benefit of the tournament as well, is that they're very easy shows to watch throughout the tournament. But unfortunately, like you said, we're going back to the normal format, and we'll see how that turns out, but hopefully we can still have a good show in front of the fans.
Absolutely. Yeah. I guess that's as much as we have to say about the New Japan Cup. Again, thank you to all the listeners who participated in Dylan's impromptu survey about the New Japan Cup. Definitely shows that you have some different opinions than we had, but that's fine too, I guess.
Absolutely.
Great to see New Japan back, definitely. But there definitely is a lot of discuss, I have to say. And we did here on this show. So, yeah, Dylan, was a good and fun time to discuss it with you. And I think we'll be back after the tournament final next week. And until then, you can always check out Dylan's daily reviews of the New Japan Cup on our Patreon. And you can also, beginning next week, you can check out our new Week of Lariat that this time centers around Manabu Nakanishi. And that is going to be a fun time, too.
Absolutely. I cannot wait to talk about Nakanishi with you. We've already done Tenzan. And we're moving through the third generation. We've done all three of the Three Musketeers. You know, the New Japan history lesson is on tap for everybody. You know, you could go through a history of the company through the big ages to... we haven't done Inoki yet. maybe that'll happen one day for the real history lesson. That would require many, many weeks, I think, of the weeks of Lariat to cover him. But a lot of fun stuff on there. The 90s Project through 93 as well. 94 should be starting soon. So some good stuff there. And obviously, anytime there's... We did shows on the All Japan show, too.
Yes.
Zero One. We talked about Ashino and Suwama and that whole show. Zero One's financial problems. You get all kinds of cool stuff on the Eastern Lariat. To me, if you are a fan of Japanese wrestling on the whole, or maybe if you're just a fan of New Japan and you want to see, you know, reach out for some new stuff, because we've covered Noah, All Japan, Zero One, Stardom, all kinds of promotions. DDT. I do live show reviews sometimes. Even Dragon Gate. I did the whole King of Gate tournament on the Patreon, too, if you want to go back and talk about that, because they'll have a big Kobe show coming up soon. So you get all kinds of real cool stuff on the Patreon.
Definitely. Check us out, please. Patreon.com/EasternLariat. There's a $1, a $3, and a $5 tier. And, yeah, I guess that's it from us now. So to you, the listeners, thank you all very much for listening to this episode. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.